Hello and welcome to WNHH Radio's Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, and finally look behind the headlines on the stories that make New Haven tick. Mayor Tony Hart makes New Haven tick morning and night, week in, week out. She's here for her weekly, in the WNHH studio for her weekly Mayor Monday checkup on what she and we are up to in the Elm City. Welcome, Mayor Hart, and thanks for coming in.
Sure, it's great to be here.
Great to have you. If you have a question for the mayor and your name's not Bob, feel free to pop it up via Facebook Live. Bob gets the call. Go to the New Haven Independent Facebook page, and you'll see the video right there. Thanks to Gateway Community College and Birch & Moses PC for providing financial support for today's program. How was your Thanksgiving, Mayor Hart?
It was great. It was great. So
you were at your son, right?
I was at my son's house and with my little grandson. We had he had his cousins there, my nephews, and my daughter, who lives in Atlanta, was there with her sister. And
wow, we had the whole crew.
Yeah, we had a big family. Pansy, who is
daughter-in-law,
my co-grandmother.
We call that Makintonim in Hebrew, the in-laws.
Yeah. Yeah, so she was there. You know, it was fun.
Wow, yeah, ours was all about the grandbaby. Yeah, ours is fine. 5 months. How old is yours?
3 months.
And just like, it's at that stage now, I feel like it's a drug when you hold the baby. Mm-hmm. And they're so sweet, and you just feel good.
Yeah, you
just
do.
Feel happy, and the kid looks at you and smiles.
Yeah, oh, there's nothing like their smiles.
I'm really happy about biology, the fact that they have to just be so adorable and make you want to love and hug them so much so you can take care of them, because they're so vulnerable, you know.
Yeah,
it really works.
It does.
It seems like it was a quiet Thanksgiving. I mean, I feel like the whole city of New Haven took the lead of your administration and just took a 2-day furlough at the end of last week and the weekend. I mean, there was a fire. No one got hurt, thank God.
Yeah, thankfully.
But there really wasn't much news happening since the middle of last week.
No, I think everybody was enjoying their families and taking it easy.
And kind of, you know, recovering from a lot of news in the fall.
Yep.
So it's all good. We're all ready to start rolling again.
I guess so.
So what's happening Monday morning now that you're back in work mode?
Well, you know, we basically have been looking at actually economic development issues. We had a meeting on Tweed this morning just to
what was that about?
See where we are.
And who's we?
Well, it's the Tweed folks and it's the economic development folks. And so we just wanted to see, evidently there is a new flight that is going to, on Saturdays, go to Charlotte.
Oh, yeah, we've written about that, yeah.
Yeah. So we were talking about that.
When does that start?
You know, I think it's going to start soon. I'm not really sure. It's like within probably sometime next month.
And, you know, you're a big proponent of expanding the runway, the paved part of the runway, so that we could have more flights like that.
Sure.
Were you talking about that at all, the status of that quest?
You know, we are. We were talking about that. You know, it's certainly something that we're going to put in our legislative package for this upcoming legislature. And we talked a little bit about that and about the fact that, you know, we still think it's important for the economic development of really Connecticut, but as well South Central Connecticut.
Mm-hmm. And so you did early on endorse Ned Lamont for governor. He won. And we endorsed him at a press conference at Tweed New Haven Airport.
I did, and so I'm hoping.
And he signed on to your position.
Yep.
Do you think he can deliver that, or is it all going to be up to Martin Looney being the president of the newly Democratic majority Senate?
Well, I certainly think that it would require the two of them working together.
Mm-hmm. And then after that press conference, Ned Lamont did meet with neighbors who opposed the expansion, mm-hmm. and he said he was going to try to incorporate their concerns. Any movement on that?
I don't know whether or not he's done that.
I mean, is it one of those issues that in the end someone's just going to not prevail with their position? I mean, you've noise proofed the houses. You're agreeing to disagree on a lot. They believe it's an environmental issue. They believe it will not ever work.
You
guys think it's key to economic development.
And one of the things, once we get the limitation changed, before we can do anything, we've got to get deep to come in and look at the environmental.
And that's Department of Environment, Energy and Environmental Protection.
Right. And so
that's a great acronym.
I know. It's
they go deep.
Deep.
I've never heard of that before as an acronym. Because they changed it. It used to be DEP.
Yeah.
Threw energy in there.
Yeah, they did. And so, you know, it's so for people who have concerns, and I have the utmost respect for this department, if there are things that will harm the environment, we'll be told and we won't be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So to make that decision before there is the finding is problematic to me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. Okay. And then, you know, there was that one theory by one of the governor candidates, one of the ones with it began with S-T-E, Stemmerman.
Okay,
that he one. Thought we should build up the Sikorsky Airport, that he think that's the one that would compete with White Plains, and it's close enough to New Haven that that would, although you'd have the same issues, I'm sure, there with neighbors in Stratford and Bridgeport, but that he felt that was the one that's really primed for the growth that could work that way.
And, you know, one of the things we did discuss today is the fact that I believe if there is bonding that will occur, that there is a move afoot by Bridgeport because they own that, even though it's not in their town, just like we own Tweed.
Which is part East Haven, part New Haven.
They want bonding to do some development there. So, you know.
So one idea this guy Stemmerman had, again, one of the STE guys,
yeah,
the running for governor as a Republican, he thought you should combine the two into one entity.
Well, that's an
Sikorsky and
so
New
like
Haven.
An authority.
Right, and have more, and that White Plains is prime for the taking, getting a lot of their business. People don't want to deal with that crunch there. It's too crowded, a lot more traffic that direction,
mm-hmm,
close to New Haven, and that you can run the two with efficiencies well. And his idea, and this is a very Republican idea about privatization, was he feels Bradley makes money, and it could make more with cargo flights, get a private operator to get management of Bradley in return for agreeing to invest in the Sikorsky and New Haven airports as a joint entity.
Well, that's an interesting thought.
It is.
It is a real interesting thought. Although I would think that the Connecticut Airport Authority, the CAA, would probably be in opposition to that.
Yeah.
Now, there is the possibility that there are some carriers that currently go to Bradley would like to expand to New Haven. That's what we're hoping.
Oh, that's interesting. Because is there too much crowding at Bradley?
Well, you know, they're probably. I think that you have to have so many places in which you can sort of move your planes up to the terminal, and they may be. I don't know if they're out of space, but they may be close.
So, which kind of carriers are you thinking of?
You know, maybe JetBlue. You know. This one or that one, I don't know.
See, I'm so ignorant. I hate flying. I know nothing about airplanes. I'd be happy to sit home, you know, 365 days a year.
Sure.
But yeah. Oh, you don't want to say anything. See, there are specific you have in mind, but you don't want to.
I don't really.
So that's another idea, is to look at whether there's overcapacity. They're overcapacity at Bradley.
Yes. They're doing very well now. You know, there was a time that I think people were worried about their ability to stay solvent, but they're doing well.
Yeah.
And you can travel internationally from there, so they're doing very well, and I would imagine that that's something that could expand there. And, you know, maybe for more local airport travel.
Mm-hmm. You mean like smaller airports?
Yeah, there might be some opportunity there.
A lot. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what you really worry about is that, as a traveler, is that we've reduced the number of airlines, and so there could ultimately be a monopoly.
Yeah, and you know what gets me about the air travel thing now? And again, I rarely fly, and I hate it. I don't understand it well. But I learned to my astonishment that they deliberately overbook planes.
Yep.
And that when you're counting on flying somewhere, they sometimes just tell you don't get on the plane. What kind of business model is that? Isn't this like capitalism here or something? What is that? Can you explain that to me? Because you fly all over the place. I mean, what's the deal?
Well, I've never had that happen. But you know what they do when they've overbooked is that they start, and I've learned this lesson, although I've never participated other than just listening.
Right, you get a deal.
You get a deal. It starts out worth about $200. And then, you know, depending upon how desperate they get.
So if you're a poker player, you wait to see. You're going for the big prize. You're going for the thousand. But I've heard of people tell me, that's how I learned about it, where they recently were, they were forced not to fly.
Really? I didn't realize that you could be forced. Well, I've read about it.
If not enough people are playing poker and get the big deal.
Yeah, I guess if nobody, but what every time that's happened, when I've observed it, they've gone high enough and people have said, all right.
Boy, what an abuse of near monopoly.
I know, near monopoly.
So it's Monday morning. Maybe I won't have us descend into hatred of big corporations. Let's just think positive and let's talk to Bob. Bob, you're on with Mayor Harp. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Paul. Hey, Mayor. How are you today?
Good. How are you, Bob?
All right. Did you have a nice Thanksgiving?
It was wonderful.
Too much turkey?
Turkey and lots of other things.
What else?
Oh, well, there was roast beef. There was shrimp. There was, you know.
So you're going heavy on the protein.
Well, no, but then there was also sweet potato souffle with marshmallows.
So you were doing, your no carb deal was off for the day.
It was off for the day. So I had to eat it. Two different kinds of macaroni and cheese, one with peppers in it, you know. Yeah.
Peppers, that's interesting.
Yeah, it was
red
really
peppers
good.
Or green?
They were red.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and it was like, so it was a little hot. Two different kinds of cornbread. I mean, we sort of, greens. So it wasn't just that, you know, like, it was good.
We had the tofurkey this year. They started selling with the tofurkey vegan brownies. So I actually had brownies at the table in addition.
Oh, brownies?
Because usually I can't eat those because I've got egg and milk. But tofurkey brand realized there are people at Thanksgiving tables who, my brother cooks the tofurkey for me and a bunch of us, actually, like seven of our people were vegetarian this
really?
Year.
Really?
Yeah, and because my daughter and daughter-in-law and a bunch of other folks came, my wife's vegetarian. And but then tofurkey realized you could market the brownies too because we can never eat the desserts.
Okay.
Anyway, Bob, we're a little off track on your question. Was that your only question?
Well, back at the Thanksgiving table.
I got to be, when it comes to food, it's hard to get off the topic.
I know, because I wanted to hear about what that tastes like. Is
Which
it
part?
Good? The tofurkey?
It's over, you know, it's overplayed because I never felt vegetarians should feel like they want to have what the meat people don't have. I mean, we don't want to eat meat, right? It's fine, but it takes longer to cook and it's a big deal. We once did it from scratch. It takes like 5 hours. It's stupid. You could just get tofu and cook it for 30 minutes, but it was pretty good. I liked it.
What else do you have, though? Just really, really quickly, the vegetable side.
Yeah, a lot of vegetable side stuff. And my sister-in-law make, and my brother make, we have vegetables. I'm trying to remember because I remember really liking the brownies. The big thing for me was the brownies, and there was some good beer, too. We definitely carved it. When a vegan sees brownies, you can eat. That's sort of like a special day.
That's a big deal.
I try to remember what the vegetables were. I don't remember them at the moment. I think there were sweet potatoes in there somewhere. They always put a little off the side, like, this is the vegan sweet potatoes. Without the butter. I'm sorry, Bob, what was your question?
Oh, okay. That's quite all right.
You got a question?
But I do have a few questions of you today, Mayor, that I didn't get to last week.
Oh, my goodness. I thought maybe you were going to share your Thanksgiving dinner.
I didn't have my turkey until the next day. We went out to eat, and I didn't want the traditional, so I had chicken.
Oh, okay.
Lemon chicken, actually. It was very good, along with some fried calamari as the appetizer.
Oh, I love that.
But
where was it? What restaurant?
It was at Epps in West Haven.
Oh, they're good. Yeah.
So, are a lot of places open on Thanksgiving like
Thomas
that?
Thomas Boulevard. Hmm.
Yeah.
Was there a crowd? Like, were people not home on Thanksgiving?
There were a lot of people out.
Okay.
Yes, there were.
And, you know, I think a lot of people like to go out to eat on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you don't have to do all the things.
Mm-hmm.
No.
And you said you had a leftover question along with the Thanksgiving leftovers. Bob?
Did we lose him?
Bob, did we lose you?
Yeah, I think we did. The meetings, Mayor, you're having about the tax hike?
Oh, okay.
That's the tour. That's the 2018
that's the
tour.
It's really about the budget.
The budget tour 2018.
Yeah.
You've been going to community management
teams. Are you going to have them with the public?
That is the public.
That is the public. We're doing them at the management teams. I think anybody can come, and it's on a neighborhood basis. So far, we've done four. I think we have maybe five more to do. Five or six.
Okay. I may have asked you this question a while back. Parking fines, what do they bring into the city?
Oh, you know, I don't know the exact number. I think it's around between $500,000 and $700,000. It's not very much. But.
And the speeding tickets, we don't keep the money, right?
No, we don't.
So, Bob, I don't know if you saw in the Independent. One issue that the mayor's environmental advisory council is suggesting is to have us start enforcing a state rule that you get a ticket if you're idling for too long while you're sitting in your car. That was controversial on our site, but unlike speeding tickets, tickets for idling actually send the money to the city.
Oh, we get the money? Oh,
we get the money. We know what's on your mind. There's a bunch of things on my mind, too.
Police officers
we can clean the environment, and we get the money. Excuse me, Bob?
Our phone call is cutting out. How many police officers are going to enforce that?
That was a big question people said. How do you know? Do you sit there for 10 minutes and watch them do it? And they said that it's actually easier than you think. The law is that if you're just warming up, although cars without carburetor, you don't need to warm up, that it's easier to enforce than you think. You're going around the block and things like that, and you could also have traffic and parking, maybe. But that was a question people raised, how you would enforce.
Sure. I think it's something that if we decide to enforce it, that we would have to have standards that everybody understood.
And my last question to you, Mayor, is about auditing all departments. Do you think that needs to be done?
We already audit our budgets and make sure that people spend from their various departments. And so I know on credit cards, what we've done is we've done an audit internally, and my understanding is that we've had a neutral party who is auditing as we go along.
Hey, thanks a lot, Bob.
Does the Youth Services Department need to be looked into further after the credit card incident and now this latest incident?
They don't have a credit card, just to be clear. The Youth Services Department doesn't have a credit card. So the credit card issue has nothing to do with them. There are only seven. I thought there were five. I think I said five last time.
It was an employee of Youth Service who had access to credit card from a previous position she had in government when she knew where the credit card was.
Right. And so she used the credit card based upon her knowing from a previous job. It had nothing to do with Youth Services.
But I guess you're asking, Bob, about the story. I'm trying to remember now because it's before Thanksgiving, where Youth Services approved a grant for someone, the nonprofit of someone who works in the office, correct?
Yeah. Right. And so one of the things that we're going to be looking at, one is having a training so that everyone knows what the rules are and that we can then hold everyone accountable, especially the people that handle fiscal matters. So we will be doing that. We've discovered that oftentimes people get a little less vigilant on some of these matters in departments if they've been doing it a long time. So we're going to, I've asked the controller to do that. And it's really important, Bob, that you know that there were no misappropriated public funds, that whatever it is that was supposed to happen at Youth Services, it actually happened. It was a process issue. So what we want to do is to make sure, one, that everyone that is handling these dollars understands the process and follows them scrupulously so that everybody knows that we have training on it regularly and that they follow the procedure. This was a question of whether or not our procedures were followed, and evidently they were not. And we want to make sure that in all departments that happens, and so we'll be having training.
So you don't think there was any doing in Youth Services?
Well, you know, what they were contracted to do, they did. The real question was whether or not there should have been a bid and whether or not there should have been some indication on the forms that follow the issue around whether or not there was someone on Youth Services that had some sort of relationship with that particular organization.
And
they did the work,
is,
long story short.
If I can get this just this question in. Do you think residents in the city of New Haven have lost mistrust, we'll use it, in city government, in your administration?
I don't think so. I don't see a reason why they should. You know, look, everything that we are supposed to do, we've done probably better than has been done previously throughout multiple administrations. We've reduced crime. We've kept more kids in school. We've improved economic development. And so I don't know why there would be mistrust. Everything that we've set out to do, we've done it and done it well.
Sounds like I'm hearing a preview of 2019 on the campaign.
I don't know about that.
No, of course not.
Bob, I have some great questions coming up before the end of the year for you, Mayor.
Very All good, right. Bob.
She's ready. Hey, Bob, thanks a lot, man, and happy post-Thanksgiving.
And some of them may even take a thought. You may have to even get back to me on.
Well, that's always something we can do.
I'll let you think on that thought. Did you see the Soul Train Awards last night?
No, I didn't.
Is Don still around? Is Don, the guy, the host, he's still around down there?
What was that, Paul?
Is the original host still around from the 60s?
No, he's been dead for... You're talking about Don Cornelius.
Oh, Cornelius, right.
Yeah.
But so his son is getting ready to do like a spin-off of it.
Oh. Soul Train was an important cultural moment, I think, in sort of integrating popular culture. I certainly watched it as a kid.
Yeah. Faith Evans was on, and so was Erykah Badu.
Oh, it sounds like it was nice.
Yeah, it was.
Thank you.
You'll be able to see it. It will rerun for quite a while, the show.
I'll be looking for it.
Hey, thanks a lot, Bob.
All right, Mayor.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
And you are listening to Mayor Monday with who else but Mayor Tony Harp at WNHH, your home for community radio, 103.5 FM, live streamed in newhavenindependent.org. Adi Nunez says, hello, Madam Mayor. Hello, Adi. Thank you for listening. And so you mentioned there, Mayor, about the great 2018 management team tour, where you're going to talk about the budget at each of the neighborhood management teams. I love our management team structure. It started out as teams that start with community policing, a program you authored, co-authored as lead authoring on as an alderwoman, back when we called it alderwoman, an alderman, early 90s. And we set up these teams and neighbors to talk to their cops. Quickly became something else. They still talk to the cops as much as anybody. They talk to city officials, people want to build in their neighborhood. They've sort of become the entry point of democracy in New Haven, where you find out what neighborhoods think, the people who get involved in things and care most and have a stake. And so you decided that you wanted to, tell me if I'm putting words in your mouth, you want people to really understand how the budget works and why you've made decisions. And so you decided to take it there.
Right. We thought that, you know, well, there was so much of a spin on the budget, especially around the 11%, that took a snapshot in time and really didn't look at over a number of years. And I thought that it was inaccurate. And I thought the only way to really get the accurate, what I thought was the accurate way to see this out there, was to just begin to speak to the community and hear what their concerns are and explain to them our process. And so so that's what we've been doing.
Interesting, because Bob said something. A few commenters said, well, when are you going to do it in public? And there's no, but I don't think it was a bad question.
Yeah.
Because you and I look at it because we know how things work. So we say, what could be more in public than management teams? That's the ultimate democracy, grassroots level, every single neighborhood, very public meetings. The schedules are there on the web, in your neighborhood. But there are always people who don't know about when stuff takes place and where.
Oh, that's true.
And I don't think there's a better way to deal with the public than management teams. I don't think there's an alternative. Like, instead of going to management teams, there'd be a way you'd reach more people who want to know the answers. But it is true that still people sometimes don't find out. And I guess you got to get a lot of avenues to get the word out.
And I mean, the really good thing is this is to sort of say, this is where we are. These are the decisions that we made. We're going to be going through a whole budget process starting in March. And everyone will have public hearings that everyone from New Haven can come to. And as it stands now, if we've already been to your neighborhood, I'm sure that another neighborhood, which is close or even not so close, wouldn't mind if you come.
So I guess on the city website, can you find management teams? Do you go into police department and go to management teams there about when they meet?
I don't know where it's located on the website, but I'm pretty sure that if you look under LCI or the police department, that you would find it in either place.
And so last week you were downtown Wooster Square. Do you know, one thing I was wondering was, do you get different kinds of questions at different management teams?
You do. Different management teams have different interests. So when I was in East Shore, they asked me about Tweed.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, it's an opportunity to ask any questions.
The mayor, anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
You come, you'll ask you. You'll
yeah.
Ask
you. And, so, downtown, you have more people that are really very activists. And so, you know, some people asked questions or had ideas about ways to solve certain problems. That's the other thing that we can do, is that we give people an opportunity to sort of chime in and say, well, this is how I would have done it.
Tom Breen was at your one in Wooster Square, and it seemed like the sales tax came up. So in addition to explaining to people how revenues work, you raised the point that if we get permission, there's been a proposal on the table to do this for years, we can add to the sales tax, have the state process it along with the other sales tax revenue so that we don't incur new costs, and send the money back. You know, it's interesting. It's so hard to talk about taxes and paying for government since the Howard Jarvis movement proposition, whatever it was in California when we were younger. In this country, we've now taxes have become a dirty word.
No, it's very dirty.
And you're never supposed to pay for government. You're just supposed to provide government. But there are also legitimate concerns how your money's spent. And there are people who feel like they're getting taxed out in New Haven and other places, Hamden. When we did a story, one of the first times you had this proposal for the sales tax, we were shocked. We went to the people who would feel it most, a half or a 1% addition to the sales tax. Not a single person objected.
For some reason, you know, and I think that when I was in the legislature, we noticed this too, that for some reason, sales tax, people think it's voluntary.
Because you could, like, you have to live in your house, but you don't have to buy that extra ice cream cone. You
right.
do have to buy food. I guess some stuff gets exempted. It's also, on the one hand, sales taxes are considered more aggressive. Poor people pay more.
Right.
But on the other hand, it's so little. So we would talk to them about what it would mean. We went to the arts and craftsmen store or the dollar store.
Mm-hmm.
And we noticed it would be like 3 cents or 7 cents if a big item, you know. So it really wasn't a lot of money out of their pocket, but it does add up in a way that would help us deal with our structural deficit.
I think that it would be somewhat helpful. And as I've said before, I go to meetings around the country with other mayors, and they have so many more tools to raise revenue than we do. So somebody asked me, well, what are those tools? So, of course, there's the sales tax. There's also a local income tax, taxing everyone who works in your city.
Well, that's a commuter tax, right?
Well, you could call it that, or you could call it an income tax.
Because it's not everyone who works. If you live and work in New Haven, you want to pay it.
Well, I think if you worked in New Haven, the way that, I'm just trying to think, the way that it works in New York, as I understand it, it's if you work in New York.
Really? Even if you live in Manhattan?
Yeah, I think so. I'll have to get back to you on that, but that's what I think.
Because when people say, then you're driving out, telling employers, then don't be in New Haven because you don't have to pay as much tax.
Well, you know, I think that that would be something, but if they had to pay it no matter where they, no matter where they worked in Connecticut,
yeah.
Then, you know, the problem I think that we have in Connecticut is that we have 169 towns and we're all competing against each other, even yeah. now when you think about the property tax.
So although you've started to make some inroads working with your suburbs on coastal management and
right.
flooding and how to spend dollars coming in so that everyone benefited.
And transportation.
So
then
it'll be tough economic
together.
Development.
Yeah.
Can we all share in the proceeds of working together to get places where we want it? Like, you didn't fight the Haven, the kind
right.
of
no, I didn't.
Outlet mall in West Haven, because you saw jobs coming there and it wasn't so important to fight to stop them the way we did a generation ago. Stop suburban development. It was not the kind of development that we would benefit from anyway having in town.
And, you know, I keep remembering that Connecticut itself is the size of
Houston, you said?
Houston, Texas, and Los Angeles County.
Yeah.
So, you know, we need to really think about how we share resources. And what would Connecticut suburbs be if they didn't have cities like New Haven?
That's darn true. Now, one point you brought up to me, we talked about the sales tax in the past. You're saying, well, let's say we get the sales tax bill passed. We can add 1%, or we can add a surcharge to meals and entertainment, which is one I thought was very interesting because people are not going to not go to the play that they're paying or the concert they're paying $50 or $74 if it's $72 or $52, or they're not going to have the $30 meal if it's $31. Your concern at the time was if we got that passed and to get us, let's say, $10 million, which was the conservative estimate a year, that state legislators, they might say, okay, we helped you get that $10 million. We're not going to shave $10 million off the other aid we give you through
mm-hmm,
educational cost sharing or payments in lieu of taxes. How do you avoid that?
Well, we've got to say, well, the other thing that I think is that the payment in lieu of taxes law says that we should be getting 77% of
right.
our property tax. Until we're up to 77, for those of us, whether it be state property or college and hospitals, then we shouldn't be penalized for getting these other resources.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about this weekend. So you're just talking about state issues and what we'd love to hear governors say in the legislatures. We've been following Stacey Abrams' race in Georgia. She was almost the first black female governor, I guess, of any state.
Mm-hmm.
And in the state that's had a lot of the biggest racial conflicts, although they've done integration very well in Atlanta, but
yep,
there are a lot of states. But, you know, it was amazing how close she came.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many of us who feel like it was a completely stolen election, beginning with the 50,000 voters taken off the rolls for not having handwriting that matters quite, or missing a hyphen in their name, and most of them are black. But here's what I was thinking about this weekend. So many people here past you were hoping Stacey Abrams would win. She came so close. We've never come close in Connecticut to having a black governor, let alone a black female governor. Are there ways sometimes that the North is behind the South on racial issues? I mean, you were considered a strong contender for governor. You decided not to run.
You know, I think that there are ways in which the North is behind the South. And, you know, just from a population point of view, there are probably proportionately statewide more African Americans in Georgia than there are in Connecticut.
And in Connecticut, we don't have a Secretary of State who works very hard to prevent black people from voting.
Right.
We've had a black state treasurer for decades. That's sort of been, except for interregnum when John Rowland's guy put in there Paul, I forget his last name, before he went to jail. But otherwise, we've had a black, but no other. We've never really had a strong contender for a major party nomination, African American, for governor, lieutenant governor. Is there a reason for that?
You know, I really don't know. I have no real idea. I just wonder whether or not the ability to move up in the party is as open to African Americans as one it would be. I mean, it's interesting to me that they had an African American governor in Massachusetts. So you would think that we would have one in Connecticut.
I just don't know why. Last time the Democrats would seriously consider an African American on the ticket. There was talk of Gary Winfield as lieutenant governor. That didn't happen. But I wonder if it's the voter. So unlike in Georgia, like we just elected Johanna Hayes in the 5th District, mm-hmm. so a black woman. There was a lot of enthusiasm about that. We elect very liberal, though not necessarily of color, Congress people in general. The last African-American congressperson was a Republican, Gary Franks, in that kind of fluke election. Do you think, it's always been thought that the political wisdom, conventional wisdom, is that when Connecticut votes for governor, they're thinking differently from when they votes for other offices. They want kind of liberal fighters for the national offices, but they want more of a banker type, which can also have racial connotations, for the governor. The suburbs who determine the vote often might not be as open, that people's own racial attitudes come into play in ways they might not know.
It's a real interesting thing to contemplate. I haven't really thought about it in that way, but I think if the right candidate came up and decided that's what they wanted to do, that they could have a successful run in Connecticut.
But it would have been interesting if you had tested that. Think about it. What that year would have meant with the whole Trump, to hold Trump and anti-Trump factor in elections, and how nationally in the Johanna Hayes race, that would have been very interesting.
Would have been interesting.
But boy, they would have piled on you about some of this budget stuff.
I know. Tell me about it.
You did. You did. Wouldn't have been
we
fun.
Want you.
You run for mayor, boy. They would not have gone lightly. I mean, yeah. They didn't go hard on the payday lending for Stefanowski, but I think, you know.
I think it would have been.
They didn't really have much to go on Ned about. There really wasn't that governor's race. There wasn't really a lot of those personal issues. There were more kind of blah people than, you know.
Well, I think that sometimes that you're better off not to have offended a certain group of people or made a certain kind of
to take a stand
decision in a way that offends people. So sometimes it's easier to be that person that doesn't have a record. You know?
I got a segue on that. So you take a stand with We're Sanctuary City. That's a majority position in New Haven. And now there's been a lot of concern about, it's been a year now. Nelson Pinos from Ecuador has been living a sanctuary church downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And he just got his appeal for a stay denied. So he's going to be there indefinitely. And I believe today at 5:00, it's Monday, if you're listening to this live, there's going to be a demonstration outside the federal courthouse about the caravan, the migrants from Central America stopped at the Mexican border yesterday. There was tear gas used to repel them. Any thoughts on how that's playing locally? Any concerned about that?
Well, you know, one of the things that I think is really great about New Haveners is that we do see ourselves as one New Haven, no matter where you came from. And, you know, I struggle with the idea around this whole idea of America, a land of immigrants, and the way that we're behaving now. And I struggle with it. I really think that we are one human race, and that for years, we were the ones that said to the rest of the world, no matter where you came from, no matter your tribe, you could come here and be a part of us. And I thought that was important for the world. And I really worry that there is no strong voice that says that. I think it's bad for humanity.
I think you're going to see the Democratic candidates for president running on immigration in the way you're talking about, unless Hillary Clinton runs. She made that weird statement last week where she was saying that she was criticizing European governments for being too open to immigrants, and that's caused the crisis. I mean, it's an interesting argument, just not one you expect hearing from someone, you know, in that position.
Yeah, that is kind of a strange argument.
There must be weird things going on in that woman's head. As you know, like, you always have all these revelations about the misdeeds of the Trump administration, so you must be sitting there saying, man, my whole life I was waiting for this, and they pulled that on me, they pulled that. But on the other hand, you know, all the stuff coming out about Me Too and the way she was complicit in attacking women who spoke up about sexual harassment, I think it might not be smart for her to run again.
I would think, you know, I'd love for a woman to run, but I don't believe it should be.
I think we said this before, the fact that there are going to be a number of women could be a real plus, because then you see who, you don't have to have one woman being the standard bearer for feminism, mm-hmm. but you get like, see who gets vetted. You got Amy Klobuchar, you got Kamala Harris, you got Kristen Gillibrand, whose name I always say wrong. And they're really three very different people. It'll be interesting to see. And they're all, you know, they're all good senators.
Mm-hmm.
Kamari Cooper, thanks for writing in. A bit off topic. No, there is no off topic. Sorry, we want you to write in. Thank you. Is there an update on the old Coliseum space, the live, work, learn, play? When you came into office, they promised they were going to build there. We sold them land, and it's still nothing happening. I think you said last week, Mayor Harp, that they have found a partner to finally, they didn't have the capital before, and that now they're trying to come back to you now with a very specific partner with a deal to show they can move forward.
Yes, and with a specific proposal. I think they want to change the proposal somewhat. Still be housing, still be retail, still have that sort of public square that they talked about. They weren't really sure what they were going to do about whether or not they would keep the existing architect. And so they... So they were going back to the drawing board to give us a more specific plan.
And the hotel was still central to it?
To me, it's central.
But will they be able to find someone who will accept a union? Otherwise, they're not going to get approval for that.
Well, you know, I think that it was one of the things, and I think you pointed this out, that at the time, it was one of the things that helped it sail through the Board of Alders. And so... So I'm not certain what...
So you're making a rational argument on the merits.
So what I'm basically saying is that...
Just look, what realm are we dealing with here?
I think that, you know, if there is going to be a hotel, of course it's going to be a union hotel. But I think that what I understood them to say was that since this project has come about, there have been a number of boutique hotels that are being built in the city, and that we may not have the same need for hotel space. I don't know if I agree with that. I'm asking my economic development team to take a look at that.
I know they feel we should go endlessly with hotels. I mean, I think they think we're under-hoteled. But you're saying that maybe that would make it go easier if it doesn't have to have a hotel in it.
Well, I think they think that what I heard from them, and they are...
Who's them? You mean the people, the Live, Work, Learn, Play.
Yeah, Live, Work, Learn, Play is one. They had a hard time when... They said they were going to do the hotel, finding a hotel that would come in. They found a hotel, then they couldn't find the money to actually do the project. They now have found a partner that is questioning whether or not we need to do a hotel. And I would argue that I still think that we need a hotel that can give us sort of small to medium-sized conventions in our town. We have... Yale and other places that give meetings, and the Omni's just not big enough, from what I've been told.
But what if you decided you try to get that elsewhere to get this project going?
What do you mean by elsewhere?
Like, maybe, ideally, you'd want to have the convention center space, but maybe that'll make this a tough sell, because it'll be hard to get a union that, a hotel operator who would pay enough money to have a union feel they can make it going, so maybe... That would be the price of getting this project going, not having to include the hotel.
But then I think we need to reconsider the project. Evidently, there was a competition for the developer, and of this really the most prime land in our city. And and so if they're just going to do a B-flat housing project, maybe we should think about something else. I don't know.
What's B-flat mean?
Means boring.
Oh. And who is the people that got?
I think that they're speaking, I believe I can say on the air, but I think that they're working with Spinnaker. They're doing a project.
Oh, they're making things happen. They've got a, this blew my mind. Spinnaker, Fairfield County.
I'm excited.
I met the owner, and stuff's going up so fast. You just settled the last lawsuit that was getting in the way of them building the next project. I mean, this thing at Audubon's going right up. $250 million so far.
Mm-hmm.
They've put $250 million on the table to build projects around New Haven without needing public subsidies of any kind.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of the opposite of live, work, learn.
Oops.
Wow. That's big news.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not all firm, but we've certainly had those conversations.
Excellent. And Kamari Cooper says, how about bringing a pro basketball team instead?
Where would they play?
Is there one? He's saying, like, put the stadium.
That's an interesting idea. We hadn't thought of it.
That's how a politician says, we've tried a lot of sports thing, hasn't worked, there's no team looking to come in, and boy, there'd be a lot of years long. I mean, it is an interesting idea.
It is.
And we've kind of moved away in knocking down the Coliseum from the sports style of development. It seems like the arts and entertainment seem to be more of the New Haven.
And everybody wants, and everybody thinks that you need to have a sports team in order to be a real city.
And Hartford's had a mess. That's part of the reason they got bailed out.
Yeah, and when you look at places that have really said, okay, we're going to need that, it hasn't really paid off.
And Joanne Levitt Viglio says, we do welcome immigrants, but you must enter legally. Thanks, everybody, for your comments and your questions. Lucky Climbers, talk about things that pay off. We had a factory on East Street called Spacecraft, a company that started here, went through two generations of the Soto family, built Gen Engine parts, and it moved to Meriden. It got sold. Then it moved to Meriden. But it didn't stay vacant for long. So there's still manufacturing happens in New Haven. There's a local company called Lucky Climbers that's also in its second generation. Went from Tom to Spencer Lucky. They had some family fighting the way families often do and worked it out. And he took over the company, The Sun. And it's moved three times. Oh, well, it's had three separate locations in New Haven now because it kept getting bigger. Started at 5,000 square feet, went to 12,000. And it's just moved into a 29,000 square foot factory at the old Spacecraft factory on East Street. They build fancy playground structures, climbing structures. And they don't build them in New Haven. There's one at the, what's that private school? Foot School. But they build them in California. They ship them to the Middle East.
Mm.
And they're going great guns. They got 20 people designing and building these. So that was a real coup. Your economic development department worked so hard. Helen Rosenberg, I think, was
behind
this one. She's been there forever. Never hear about her.
Mm-hmm.
But she's always the one working for years and years to make things like the Clock Factory and River Street happened. Yeah. So that was a good, that was lucky.
That's very lucky.
We got to have fun with that headline. Okay. And there's affordable housing task force working. Like, what are our solutions to get more affordable housing? And Liam Brennan's used to be a federal prosecutor. He's now at Legal Aid working on affordable housing with a whole community group. Spoke at a task force meeting last week. And he was arguing that empty lots can be part of our solution to the affordable housing crisis, that we should change the rules for how small a lot we're allowed to build a house on. That whole micro housing movement, 700 square foot housing. I remember Eric Johnson, when he ran your Livable City Initiative, was thinking about this in a big way, because in New Hallville especially, but also in the Hill and other places in Fairhaven, you have these vacant lots where years ago someone, didn't pay their taxes, the housing ran down, you knocked down the house, and some of those lots become wonderful pocket parks. They become community gardens, but a lot of them stay vacant. And Eric at the time was talking about trying to build these micro houses. Liam's saying, can we change the zoning so that, there's some 1.12 per acre figure that's used in zoning law. I'm sorry, I don't remember more of that. Make it smaller. What do you think about that?
I would have to see it and really understand the ways in which we probably would have to have sort of planning and architectural standards for it. I worry, for many years, we tore down that whole area over where Route 34 is because of, the condition of the housing, some of it because we wanted to
build the highway.
Which we never did. But,
my favorite kind of highway, by the way.
The highway to nowhere, that never happened. So I just worry that we don't want to do something. I know that there's some that say that we should increase our density, and we are doing some of that currently, but I don't think we should take it lightly from a planning perspective to make sure that we're not doing something that, one, creates a structure that we can't keep up.
Well, you're listening to Mayor Monday and hearing what's up with Mayor Harp and how she's looking at stuff. I always enjoy this every week. The Burn Grant. That's a grant we got from the federal government, $1 million, to work at the roots of violence and violence prevention in New Hallville. It's the first year of implementation is over. There's going to be a second year. There was a meeting last week. You can read about in the Independent today, where they learned that the director of the program, Arthur Edwards, is leaving for a job at the Board of Ed. How's that program going so far, and what do you see next? Are you happy with the way it's worked? Do you look to make some changes?
I think that it has been really successful. They wanted to reduce crime. Crime, according to your article, is down 50%, but in my discussions with others, they say it's down as far as a little over 80%.
Wow.
And so
I guess it's what Baseline used. The fact is it's down a lot.
It's down a lot.
When you became mayor, you go to funerals all the time for teenagers, and now when you do, that's a huge event.
It's a huge event, and one that doesn't happen often. And you've got to think that by putting those dollars in there, giving people resources to help build community, has made a difference and made the community safer.
Mm-hmm. Molly Wheeler wrote in, love to hear from Molly. Where are the things in the city in terms of granny cottages in the back of single-family lots to have an aging parent living in, for example? There's currently no allowance for it, but some cities are keen on these being answers to affordable housing, aging populations, and future rentals. I know that in East Rock recently someone did not receive permission to build an in-law or grandparent apartment on there. That some people have talked about, can we change the zoning or have more flexible interpretation of zoning, do what Molly's talking about.
Actually, I like that better than I do micro housing.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've seen that done out west, and it seems to work very well in really small.
And it's nice for families,
lots.
Too.
Yep.
And you have the grandparent who can take care of the kids if both parents are working or it's a single parent.
And, you know, the grandparent has their privacy, but then they're also a part of the family.
And you
can
take care
like
of the grandparent, too, if the grandparent needs help. And sometimes it's not even grandparents. Sometimes it's just the renter.
Yeah. I like that, actually. I like it a little bit better.
Molly, thanks as always for your questions. Let me see if there's anything I wanted to ask you before we... before we said any thoughts on Hamden? They're doing this big, they're having a big schools argument in Hamden. You know, Hamden's changed a lot racially and politically in the last decade or two. I would argue that Southern Hamden is part of New Haven now. That's my theory. We'll explore that later in other depth. Uh-huh. But right now, and this week, they've been working for a year on how to change how all their schools are set up because the state said you're racially out of balance.
Right.
And they're also losing school population, even though I thought their overall population was growing. So they wanted to close some schools, make the middle school more grades, with the ultimate goal of having more racial balance. How's that, besides the fact being glad you're not in the middle of a mess like that, what is your take from New Haven? Any views on that?
Well, they
you
do.
You don't need to if you don't want.
Well, no, I mean, they do have really large schools. I think they just have one high school, as I understand it.
It's, and middle too, right? Or no?
And it's huge. And so what I'm trying to understand is how do they have racial isolation when they just have one high school and one middle school? Everybody's going to that school, right? I don't.
So it's something about adding to the middle school to have the elementary schools get more diverse and closing one. First, they want to close one like in a black area, New Hall, where they said, don't get rid of our schools to make us more. Because there's always that issue we're dealing with New Haven, where efforts to get rid of racial segregation sometimes make us more racially segregated or remove resources from the black community. For us, it was when we closed Hyde.
Mm-hmm.
Partly because the state said you don't have enough white people there because out of the Sheff versus O'Neill lawsuit, we were supposed to try to have regional schools that are racially balanced. But what happened is we had this good regional school that so many black and Latino people wanted to go to that we got to the point of saying no to suburban black families, Latino families, so that we can get more white suburban families in. So in the end, a desegregation effort led to a situation where white suburban families had more of a chance than black and Latino suburban families to get to a quality school.
No, I think that's really true, and that's really true in terms of early education, probably even now if we took a look at it in New Haven at our pre-K programs in our magnet schools. They're really hard for New Haven residents to get into. And so one of the things that, and we'll have a bill in to do this, but they changed the law in Hartford that would make our magnet schools And we were the first to really, and probably the only city that does local magnets to make them all out of balance, when I really believe that they ought to be grandfathered in. And so we're going to be working.
Oh, that's an interesting idea.
Yeah, we're going to be working very hard to get, and we had grandfathering, but it was taken away. We're going to try to get that back.
Wait, race in schools, one of those issues where you could have the best intentions and it's still so complicated. There are unintended consequences. Finding fixes is harder than identifying the problem.
Yeah, I really think there just needs to be more time on task and really focused in a classroom.
All right. And Molly Wheeler said it's the elementary schools in Hamden that they're trying to get the balance in.
Okay.
It's great when the listeners help us with the discussion. I mean, that's what makes this show. I think I love when we hear from our
listeners. At Hamden High, and you're like, they only have one high school.
Candle lighting. No, not candle lighting. Tree lighting.
Yes.
Thursday, I believe it's 7 p.m. on the green.
Well, I think you can come down to the green as early as 5 o'clock. There are going to be lots of fun things to do.
This is one of the big events of the year.
Yes, and then at 7 o'clock is when the tree lighting will occur, but there are going to be people singing. There's going to be a carousel. You can take rides. It's going to be so much fun, and there's going to be fun for everybody. So come down on Thursday. And then on...
Before we get that, do you turn a switch?
I get to push a button, but...
That's fun. So what's it feel like when you got your whole city of all these different ages here? And it's kind of dark, which makes things more fun when there's people singing and playing.
Right.
It feels festive, and you turn the button, all of a sudden thousands of lights go on in the center of the city.
It's exciting. It really is. And you know what? What's really exciting is to see the look on the kids' faces. Their eyes.
It is quite a sight with that light. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're all powerful, like superhero.
Yes. And I usually do it with the people who have donated the tree. So, you know, it's not by myself.
And then I interrupted you talking about Sunday at 5:30.
Right. And that's when we're going to light the menorah. First night of Hanukkah. So come on down. It's going to be fun. There'll be dancing there too. It'll be a lot of fun.
All right. It was a lot of fun checking in with you, Mayor Monday. Thanks so much for coming on and being such a joy to talk about what's going on in New Haven with. Thanks everyone for listening. Thanks for the questions, everybody. Thanks for joining us on Mayor Monday. Thanks to Gateway Community College and Bertram Moses PC for providing financial support. I'm done with all the thanks. We're going to take it out with Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free. From the group CD, A Plea for Peace. We know what it's like to be free. We just got to remember to book our flight, whether it's at Tweed, Sikorsky, with that one in Hartford, Bradley, or just in the stratosphere or with planes. Thanks for listening, folks, and have a great week.